Connected live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
I'm so excited. It being a Wednesday evening, you know what we'll be discussing for the next hour, and that is we'll be talking legal matters with legal expert Ntabiseng Dubazana in studio with us this evening. Welcome back. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm excellent. I'm really excited about the topics that we have to discuss this evening. Remember, you can send in your questions about the conversation that we're having or any legal questions you may have for Ntabiseng on our WhatsApp line 0636880959, or give us a call 086 000 0059. Ntabiseng, the first topic is so critical.
Yeah.
We're talking consent.
Yeah.
And the overturning by the Supreme Court of Appeal of the Eastern Cape High Court's acquittal of a man who had been convicted of raping his girlfriend.
Yeah. Yeah.
Give us the context here.
So X and Y met at Varsity, and they went out on a date, and then X said to Y, listen, let's go back to my place. Don't worry. Don't worry. We're not going to do anything. We'll be right. And then they go back to the place. A lot of kissing happened. A lot of heavy duty things happened. And then after that, there was oral sex. And after oral sex, there was actual penetration. Right? So that is X's story. So now Y, who's the female in this particular instance, says that, no, listen, X did say that we're not going to have any sexual intercourse. And that's why I was comfortable to go home with him. And then when we got to his place, we ate, there's a lot of heavy kissing. I had no issues with that. And then he took off my clothes. I didn't have any issues with that. And then there was oral sex. I didn't have any issues with that. And then whilst all of that was happening, I felt penetration. And then that's when I said, no, stop. Let's not continue with this. And yet X did not listen to my pleas. So in the regional court, before it went to the high court, that's when X, the guy, was found to be guilty of the crime of rape. Ne?
Right.
And then mainly because his defense at the time was that there's no way I could have seen or recognized that consent had been withdrawn based on this sequence of events that I have just described. And then the magistrate in the regional court said, listen, your explanation
doesn't hold.
No. And then he took it on appeal to the High Court in Eastern Cape.
Yes.
And then in that High Court decision, his version of events was accepted.
Yeah, I'm so uncomfortable with the judges, even because, okay, anyway, it doesn't matter. Let's not speak about Bush. I imagined that would be with
yes.
In particular, Acting Judge Thembeka Ngugayithobi wouldn't have come to this conclusion, but he, alongside Judge Nyamega Ngamana, come to the conclusion that, what's this thing called, foreplay?
Yes.
Is sufficient.
Tacit consent.
Sufficient and tacit consent.
Correct.
Which, wow.
Yes, it was a changer for us in the criminal defense, because we were like, okay.
That's a very scary precedent.
Yeah. And then with that, it gave a different meaning to what consent is.
That's right.
Because consent, it's always been that when I say no, it's no. When I say yes, it's yes. And the bottom line of it was that submission will never be consent, right? So in other words,
Yes.
Eventually you give in. That's submission.
It is. And as unfortunately young boys are always, just keep push her in the sand in primary school. Just ask her again. Text her again.
Mm-hmm.
WID. Mm. Are you up? Yes. And that's not consent. May I take a step further from what you just said?
Yes.
Actually, in time you're saying not so much that consent is no and no and yes is yes, but that consent is only yes.
Yes.
So in other words, by the version of events that you explained earlier about Y's experience of the occasion, she was none the wiser that penetration was happening until it happened.
Correct.
And so there was no Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And they shouldn't have needed to. You know what I'm saying? If consent is seen as only you may.
Yes. Yeah.
Then
there was never consent in the first place.
May I quote what the Supreme Court of Appeal has said? So now what we're talking about is that the Supreme Court of Appeal has now overturned his acquittal.
Yes.
Saying that, this quote I thought was very interesting, were the conclusion reached, I quote, by the High Court to prevail, leading to the dismissal of this appeal, this would not only be a perverse incentive to unscrupulous persons taking advantage of their victims, but also have the effect of frustrating the speedy realization of the constitutional objective of gender equality, mm-hmm. which is one of the foundational values of our constitutional order. Just say that again in English for us.
So, in terms of the General Law Amendment Act and the Sexual Offences Act, consent is very, very clear, right? Yes, it can be tacit. Yes, it can be verbal. But at the end of the day, consent is very clear. And consent can be taken away at any point. So the argument that was in the High Court, or rather the judgment that was issued in the High Court, said that by virtue of saying yes to your clothes being taken off and you not objecting to him taking his clothes off, by you not objecting to the oral sex, therefore that was deemed as tacit consent. Therefore, there was no way that the accused could have realized that there was any sort of a consent being removed. Her version of events in the regional court was that she kept on protesting throughout the event.
Okay.
And he's saying there was no protesting. Remember, at the end of the day, rape is a very intimate crime.
Yes.
There's only two people.
Yes.
So it's your version versus mine.
Yeah.
And now the court, beyond a reasonable doubt, has to believe your side of the story or my side of the story.
That's
the bottom line, right? So now the SCA is saying that when they say the perverse part of all of this, it's because it means that anybody who finds themselves in a vulnerable position and having to submit to a situation such as that can be said to have given consent.
I hear that 100%. And if I can take you a step further, I want us to go into the gender equality part of the SCA judge's statement, because your point, vulnerable, and the idea of power balance is critical in this particular situation, whether it be physical power or, unfortunately, sometimes financial power, in which many romantic situations end up. At what point do I say, but you took off your clothes, or I can take it a step back, or I can start with, you allowed me to perform oral sex.
Yeah.
Go back, you took off your clothes, you came home with me.
Mm-hmm.
You took the drinks I bought you at the club. You took the streetwise too.
Mm-hmm.
I picked you up.
Yeah.
So it allows that perversion to go all the way back to, unfortunately, in our society, not just South Africa, around the world.
Mm.
It does seem to be that the law is trying to protect us from these societal ills that say, don't be a tease.
Yes.
So, you know, and so in that gender equality, women don't get to just enjoy your company unless they're like, okay, I'm going to have to pay for it at the end
in
of the
one way or another.
Yeah.
And that is what I think the SCA was trying to protect in that situation, to say, listen, our vulnerable in society, be it women, be it children, and also men, unfortunately.
Absolutely.
Find themselves in positions whereby they are now being bound to do certain things that they were never going to do had they been given the choice to do so, if we uphold the High Court ruling as it stands. But with that, as it is, the matter, yes, was overruled by the SCA, but it's now going for confirmation in the Constitutional Court.
Okay, well, this is critical.
So now the Constitutional Court is weighing on the option. Okay, this is why it's important in the Constitutional Court. Before I go into that,
yes,
an accused person doesn't have the burden of proving anything.
Right.
The state has the burden to prove his guilt beyond a reasonable doubt.
Okay.
Right? Without foundation, now what is being decided or argued in the court is to say the onus now rests on the accused to show that he did or she did everything in their power to ensure that the victim did not feel victimized. So in other words, you kept asking for consent every 2 seconds,
right,
or whatever the case may be, which is going to be a problem in terms of Section 35 of the Constitution, which is the rights of suspected and arrested persons.
Okay.
Because I have the right to be presumed innocent.
Yes.
In terms of Section 35.
Okay.
But if the argument that consent, I have to have a burden of proof.
Right.
It means I'm already guilty before everything is put out.
So take me one half a step back. Yeah. Why does the burden of proof shift to the accused now that it goes to the Constitutional Court?
That is where the question is. I think that is where the argument, the Human Rights Commission, if I'm not mistaken, is the amicus curiae in this thing.
I see.
So well,
alongside the state.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So they want to understand why are we shifting the burden? Because remember, the onus is on you as the state to prove my guilt. So if I'm already assisting you in that, then it means I don't have a say in whether or not I'm guilty already. As it is, if Ntabise comes and says Mudibedi did this, Mudibedi is already presumed that he's already done it.
So, but here's the, if I can quote a little bit more from the High Court judgment now, where the appellant X, the gentleman, is now appealing being found guilty of rape. In the magistrate's court, acting judge Ngai Thobi's judgment reads the following: it was the evidence of the appellant Tsoko that throughout the encounter the complainant was an equally active participant. She was not merely passive. She kissed the appellant back. She held him. She had no problem with the removal of her clothes. She watched him take off his clothes without raising an objection. She knew he was erect. She did not object to the oral sex. She doesn't dispute that.
That's where the issue is.
And then he goes on to say the only area where there was a dispute was after the penetration. Now, for me, that's already been proven that the penetration happened without her knowing. The defense that... Let me explain what I'm trying to say. I think it has been proven and that the state actually kind of failed to protect him here. Because to say, Rifilwe and Ntabiseng agree. Ntabiseng picked her up.
Mm.
Drove her to the mall, bought two movie tickets, bought two boxes of popcorn. And then you're saying, if I don't go into the movie, you should presume I would go into the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not the same as, I don't know how to explain this, but sexual acts can actually end at kissing.
Yes.
They can end at oral sex, unlike a movie ticket. But there's kind of this ingrained eventuality that Judge Ngai Thobi is imposing on sexual acts.
Yes, saying that in any event, it was going to end up there.
And that's actually not factual.
Yeah, and as a result, we don't understand why you're here crying, because if you saw him take his clothes off, if you saw him do all of these things, anybody and any person in your position should have foreseen that the act is going to end up in this particular instance.
That's tricky.
Yeah. And especially because in this particular case, I think the victim was a virgin.
Oh,
so
shit.
it's not like, well, maybe people watch movies, maybe people watch porn, whatever the case may be. But it doesn't give the objective reason that Ntabiseng ought to know that if he takes off his clothes, if he's erect, if he's this, if he's that, therefore, it's going to end up in this situation.
Is there a gender imposition of bias in that High Court ruling, would you say?
I would say yes, but also...
Or societal, gender.
Yeah. And also, I think maybe as a criminal defense attorney for quite some time, you find that unfortunately, most men who find themselves in these positions are always being lied about. And then you find victims such as this that are actually telling the truth about what happened. And because they're falling within the mix of a lot of, women that use the societal shift in that women are more believed than men in such situations, they use that. And then the real victims fall in between the cracks.
It's such an underreported crime.
Yes.
And it's so seldom that is... and a falsely reported crime, but statistically. But okay, it's 17 minutes past 9. If you're just joining us, legal expert Ntabiseng Dubazana is in studio with me for Legal Matters this Wednesday. We have a voice note from one of our listeners with a question.
I just want to know, but I'm sure you are aware of my case, Tabi Singh. The civil case where I went into a business with a friend and now wants to take over the business. Yeah. Okay, I've been liaising with my lawyer, and then on a number of occasions we've asked the guys that I'm opening a case against, or taking to court rather, to we've asked them to come through and let's have a roundtable discussion, and if they haven't adhered to any of our requests. Mm-hmm. So me and my lawyer have moved on to say, okay, we're doing a court application now. But my lawyer now says that we need to involve the sheriff. Can you just elaborate a bit on the sheriff being involved, especially so early in the case? And he then further on went to say, I need to pay a deposit because we need to pay the sheriff. Can you just explain that quickly for me?
Yeah, I don't know why the sheriff would be involved at this stage, because if you haven't drafted any paperwork, either a summons or a notice of motion with a founding affidavit, it means the matter is not yet in court because you're yet to file it. So a sheriff works on instructions from either a court order, a letter of executorship in order for him or her to go and execute a warrant, all of those things. So I don't know why a sheriff is getting involved at this stage. But with regard to the round table, Rule 41 of the High Court imposes that parties must try and settle the matter before it goes to court. People have not really been following that, but on Friday, the judge president sent out communication to say that it is now compulsory for all litigants to make sure they go through mediation and settlement. So even if they're refusing now, if their attorneys and your attorneys are away, they are going to be forced to go through that settlement to prove that they tried to mediate, because judges are scarce now, so they can't hear full-blown trials anymore.
That's very helpful insight. Yeah. I'm glad you knew. I'm standing and I wasn't really sure what the case was about. So thank you very much for that. I hope that answers your questions. Feel free to keep sending us your voice notes, WhatsApps, 063-688-0959, or give us a call on 086-000-0959. I'm really curious to hear from you. As you drive, and you know, you can come on as anonymous, whether you've been X or Y in this situation. There's a crude, because it's Amy, I forget her last name now, the very crude comedian. Anyway, she's got
Schumer.
That's it. And she's got this little joke, kind of a line that she says, we've all been a little raped. And it's a crude line, but it's, I don't think it's untrue. Mm. We've all been a little raped, in terms of when you were young, when you were in a power imbalance situation, where you were in a position that said, if I don't, what will happen to me?
Mm-hmm.
If I say no now, what will happen to me? Or did I lead the person on? But I think that this case that's now going to go to the Constitutional Court is so critical in establishing, in a country with such high degrees of gender-based violence, once and for all, legally, and hopefully society follows, what the line is and what respect for a person's body is.
Yeah.
People laugh at Gen Zs when, you know, I now, with my nieces or friends or children, I ask, may I hug you?
Yeah.
You know, whereas when we were growing up, when we were going, hug auntie, hug auntie, you know.
Kiss auntie.
Exactly. And you wipe your mouth when you go around the corner. But the fact of the matter is, we're teaching children from a very young age who is entitled to make decisions about your body.
Yes.
And I think that this Constitutional Court matter is very important. So I'd love to hear from society, from yourselves, as you're listening to us this evening. If you've been X, if you've been Y, if you've heard a story about one or the other, and what you think about this case. It's 21 minutes past 9. Welcome back to it. Mason has a question for us. How are you this evening?
Good evening. I'm well. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you. What's on your mind?
So basically, I've got a friend, right?
Mm-hmm.
He found himself in a situation where a lady friend of his is accusing him of rape, right? So to cut the long story short, what happened was these two people met and they decided to go to their place together, or whoever's place. And then they agreed that they were going to have sex, right? Mm-hmm. And then during sex, the lady said she does not want to continue anymore. Mm-hmm. And they both stopped.
Okay.
Right? Packed, and she left. Now, in the morning, the lady requested money from the guy.
Oh.
No. Saying that I need money for whatever. The guy's like, no, sorry, I can't help. And then she said she was going to cry for rape. So basically my question centers around, how does this guy now defend himself?
Sure, that's a great question. And we do need to know what the law has in place for this kind of a situation, right?
Definitely, yeah.
I wish that the law was balancing on both sides, because if a man is convicted and he's actually committed the crime of rape, we're looking at a 15-year, 20-year sentence.
Yes.
But for perjury, we're looking at a 5-year sentence for somebody
right.
lying under oath, right? With that being said, there is a case, it's not very well known, I think it's only in the legal space, wherein a lady was doing exactly what you're telling us today, and she did it to 5 different men. The only luck that this poor guy had was that he was able to prove through texts that this woman was extorting financial means from him, and then she had already gone to open a case. So luckily for the accused in this particular instance, the IO was more than willing to hear him out. And then once they've proven that, they put that information in a bag, so to speak,
right.
And then they continue to investigate this lady. That's how they found out there were 4 other different men in 4 other districts in 4 different courts with the same MO. So that's when they all dropped those cases, and then they focused on her and charged her with perjury and extortion. Yeah. So that is what your friend can do. So now that she's threatening to open a case, it means that she hasn't opened it yet. He can now go to the police station and say, this is the situation. Mm. I want to open a docket for extortion, and then give the names of this particular individual. I'm not saying it's going to be easy, because trust me, in the police stations, when you talk about certain crimes that are not regularly seen, it becomes a bit of a problem. But
they're
let
resistant.
Him have it.
They're resistant to writing it down. They
yes.
say, go home and talk to your lady.
Correct.
Yeah. And also, again, much like rape, it's a he said, she
yes.
said.
Yes. So, but rather let him do it anyway, so that he can have what we call a CAS number, which is the docket number, the CAS number. Ne? So
yeah.
that when she does come and say, okay, since you're refusing to give me my $10,000 or whatever, I am now opening the docket. And when the IO for her case calls, he can then say, but here's my case number that already opened against her. And then they can be, the counter charges can be dealt with in the same court.
Okay. Oh, okay. No, understood.
All right.
Sorry for your friend, man. Good luck, Mason. Thanks for the call. 26 minutes past 9. Any other questions that you might have, not just about this, but any legal matters, as you heard a little bit earlier, do join me on and legal expert Ntabi Seng Dubazana right here on Legal Matters, as you do every Wednesday. 27 minutes past 9. I'm looking forward to discussing the next case.
Yeah.
Okay. Silfontein is a massive crisis in the country, and it has been for several months, but I think really coming to the fore now that casualties, a significant number of casualties have come forward. Almost 90 bodies have been extracted mm-hmm. from the shafts 10 and 11. It looks like it's turning from a Zama Zama rogue story to actually extortionary exploitation, maybe even trafficking
yes.
kind of story. And I have, my perspective on this case has changed, or the story has changed over time. The more information has come from those miners who are coming out from underground.
Yeah, yeah.
So tell us, give us the backdrop.
Okay. So we all know what has been happening in underground, and the bodies and everything, and also extorting mm-hmm. the government for food, for money
yes.
and all of that, so that they can survive underground, right? The issues that we are now facing up, because the civil issues are now done, and the human rights issues are now done, because people have now come out from underground. Well, more or less.
Are there not still many others under there?
Are there a lot more left? I thought they were all
out. I thought there were over 1,000 still.
Oh my God, there's still some left. I thought there were...
No?
No?
No more left.
No more left. Oh, okay.
Mudibedi said there's no one left.
Okay.
Thank you.
So now, with everybody having gone out, the main issues that we're going to court in civil suits, for them to get help, for them to get aid, all of these things, they are done because they wanted to go on urgency. And then most of the time, urgency was kicked out because it is self-inflicted urgency.
I see.
You know, the rest of the things were like, but still, our constitution says that people have a right to be protected.
Yes.
The right to life, I think, was the paramount one because of S versus Makonyane, is the one thing that stood up there.
Okay.
Now, with that having gone, and now the people are out, we are dealing with a myriad of criminal offenses.
Okay, Tiger.
Exactly, okay.
Where's the king? Well, not kingpin, but the top enforcer.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, all right. Anyway, sorry. The U.S. election distracted me for like a week. Oh, excuse me, the inauguration. So, okay, anyway, back to Stilfontein. Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
So now the myriad of criminal offenses are going to come out based on the witnesses or the accused people coming out from underground. It's fine. But what is not clear, or rather what is not known, is that the first charge that they're all going to face is going to be a Section 49 charge in terms of the Immigration Act. So Section 49 is basically being illegal in the country. That's the first thing. You are not here legally, so what must happen?
Never mind on the ground. Now you're under the ground. Yeah, you're not even meant to be here.
You're not supposed to be here. Then we're going to deal with...
But some miners are South African.
Yes, some are.
But that'll be the first one clearing.
Yes.
Okay.
And then once we've dealt with those who are illegal, remember it's going to be a very long case, but we're dealing with being illegal in the country. We're dealing with illegal mining. That's another charge.
I want to talk about that. Is there such a thing as illegal mining?
Well...
Or is it trespassing?
It is trespassing.
Okay.
It's just that it's been given the umbrella of illegal mining because the mining shaft has not been working.
Unlicensed mining maybe.
Yes.
But I think that we jump very quickly to names that can charge emotions in this
country.
Correct. Particularly when it comes to the poor.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm from Cape Town and they love to use land invaders. Not homeless. Not unhoused, land invaders, you know, and that gets the people.
The blood going.
Yeah, so illegal mining gets the people, but it's just unlicensed mining is something different. It's almost like the difference between undocumented migrant and illegal immigrant.
Correct.
You know, so I wonder sometimes when the media says illegal miners, and I'm like, well, which law?
Mm.
Okay, so take me through that. Okay, so then we're going to go illegal mining or trespassing.
Trespassing.
Yeah.
And then there is probably a charge of murder that's going to come out there. Because now we're hearing that people were being eaten. So that's also cannibalism. And then we are looking at possession of suspected stolen property.
Being the ore,
gold,
the iron.
The ore, whatever it is that they were mining in there.
Just to pause right there. So is that the full list?
So far.
So maybe
something is going to come up as we go on.
I want to hear from Wenzel, who's got a question
cool.
as well. Good evening, Wenzel. Thank you so much for joining us. What is your question about this evening?
Good evening. How are you?
Good. How are
Excellent.
You?
Excellent. Thank you.
I'm okay. Actually, I just want to ask a very important question. So we signed a lease agreement with my wife. Sorry about that. I'm on the hands-free, so they just stopped me. But anyway, thank you so much. So, by the way, we signed a lease agreement for a practice. However, it seems like there is no exit clause in the lease agreement, and we signed it 2 years. Two of the other practitioners who left, the landlord has decided to keep all their properties. And we actually wanted to leave as well, to go and set up a practice elsewhere. However, we are told that we would need to pay for the remaining year and 5 months that's outstanding. So I just wanted to ask if a lease agreement for a property only protects the lessor versus the lessee in this case, if that is even legal to start off with, and if there is any way to exit, what would be the options for us?
Okay, first of all, there's no way that a rental should be more than 12 months without the parties agreeing to it. So that's the first thing. And even if they agree to it, it can be 24 months. So exit clauses are... they're basically automatic in a lease agreement. With that being said, there's a lot of landlords that are very cricket, and this is not a first of your kind of case. So what I would suggest is that you take it to the rental tribunal, the housing tribunal, right? And then when you take it there, you inform, you submit your lease, you show what's happening and the fact that you want to exit, because they the landlord will now have to prove to the ombud to say that they had a bona fide right, so a legal right, a legal stance to do what they did and put or remove the certain clause in that lease. And if they fail to do so, then you know you cannot be held liable for the 1.5 years that are remaining in this particular lease. So start at the rental tribunal / housing tribunal and then take it from there, because their rulings, they are binding just like a court ruling. Don't let anybody lie to you and say tribunal, see their rulings are, no, they are just as binding as any civil or criminal or whatever court case. Okay.
All right. Thank you so much.
No problem.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Well, good luck, Wenzel. This LB has got a question about Stilfontein, so let's get back to that story. Good evening, Dadis LB.
Good evening. How are you?
We're good, Baba. You're live with myself and Tabi Singh.
I'm blessed. Tabi Singh.
Dadis LB.
I'd like to know, did those Zamazamas came out with whatsoever they were teaching down there?
From my understanding, I don't remember if the implements were brought out, just them. So probably if the ore is there, it's probably stuck in there. But with that being said, even if they had left the ore in there, they had removed it, they had displaced it from where it originally was. That's why it is likely that they may be charged with either theft or possession of suspected stolen property, because they can point out to Rena Ehokai in the place that they were underground.
And there was a gentleman who was interviewed by News 24 a few weeks ago who said, no, when I heard that there are crops at the top, I hid it. I'm not going to tell you where, see. But once this operation's over, I'm going right back down to get my stuff.
No, but then I don't believe they can charge them with possession of
stolen property.
Maybe not possession, but theft itself. So if imagine this environment, I'm going to ask Ntabi Singh. Mm. Imagine I try and hijack Ntabi Singh and I drive like 5 kilometers and then I get stuck because the cops are in front of me and I run.
Yeah.
I'm not in the possession of the car, but I stole it.
Yeah. And unfortunately, Ntabi Singh gets left with that car and she'll be charged with possession. I think that this will be, you are thinking at possession in the literal sense that they have with them the substance, Akir. So possession doesn't work that way. Possession can be, even if it's uile matsong ahao. That's how Section 36, that's the section that's relevant to it. So Section 36, that is how it's deemed. You don't necessarily have to be found in possession of it. But if you know where it was placed because you were involved in it, you can still be charged. That's Section 36.
Okay.
What would you say, Sajal?
Not your decision.
All right.
No, thank you.
All right, that's all.
Knows where there's some gold. Just tell us where.
We won't say anything.
We'll just split it 50-50. Okay, so all right. So before we took the calls, and please continue bringing them in and your WhatsApps, 063-688-0959, or call us on 086-00-00959. We're sitting with legal expert Ntabi Singh Dubuzana in today's legal matters. We're now talking about the Stilfontein crisis, and there are 5 particular areas of legal quandary that our dear miners might find themselves in. The Section 49 on whether or not you're legally in the country.
Yeah.
And if I'm a South African and don't have papers,
well,
you've got to find a way to prove it. No, meaning I don't have an ID or...
Oh, that's easy enough.
Okay.
So usually what they do is that if you are a South African, you don't have a birth certificate or whatever the case may be, your family members are usually within... near bounds.
Sure.
So the investigating officer is usually tasked to go find the family members.
Tabo Besta style.
Type of situation.
Let's get the DNA.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Then there's the trespassing / illegal mining.
Yes.
And I want to understand, I really want us to dig a little deeper there, because there's no act. So okay, so there's theft, there's a actually this ties into the one that Ndate Selby was asking about. So there's theft of goods from somebody.
Yes.
This used to belong to Buffelsfontein, and then I think went over to was sold to Simmers and Jack, this whole mining operation. Once I'm found to have stolen the gold, is this is this a case in favor of the state, or in favor because it's after it was closed, or is it in favor of Simmers and Jack?
Every criminal matter is the state versus. Okay. It's the state
Fair
versus.
Enough. Okay.
So even if the gold belongs to so and so, it's still the state versus.
Okay.
So that so and so will be a witness in the state's case.
Got you.
Yeah. So they will be giving evidence on where most likely the gold would have been taken from,
yes,
and how much, if this was taken, would be equating to stuff,
yes,
like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Murder.
Mm.
It looks from the condition of the men that came out of the mine, and they were certainly ill-treated physically.
Mm.
I mean, people's toes were not looking good. And first of all, wear the boots. And no boots, no hard hats, no goggles. But they also were very malnourished.
Yes.
And would it be murder if those dead bodies were the bodies of people who starved to death? Or do you think it's murder?
It could be murder either way.
Yes.
Because it could be they were starved to death because they failed to do whatever they were instructed to do.
Right.
And therefore, the person who was depriving them of any food, any water, any nutrients, had the intention or the foreseeability that if I deprive them of this, they will get sick and eventually die. So that would be under the umbrella of murder.
Okay. I'm so glad you said it exactly like that, because what if somebody tries to claim that it was the state that did that by cutting off the food?
And here would be the argument.
Yeah.
The state came in much later.
Ah. Okay.
So are you telling us, would you be telling the court to say that the malnutrition and the ill treatment came just after the state got involved in this? Or when we do the post-mortem on the bodies, will we get a report that says that the malnutrition actually started well before the state got involved?
But it was only the state that stopped the food. It was only, even by the time they got involved. So maybe I'm eating less.
Yeah.
But now the bodies are piling up because for weeks the state stopped the food.
And by whose fault were you underground in the first place?
After this, I want to now get into the rights, because now we're talking about the responsibility. I want to get into the rights of the miners themselves.
On the matter of the illegal miners, it's a case that's been going on. I'm saying, balance me quickly. How does government have to now be taken to court for people who are in the country illegally and then committing a crime? And if they had succeeded in that illegal mining and then got the gold that they wanted or whatever mineral they were mining, paid tax on the money they were going to gain illegally. So now that things have gone wrong, the government is involved. That doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, so I think, like we were debating off air, the only reason that government would be taken to court is only because of the right to life. Everything else, government has no obligation to ensure that whatever activities that are outside of the parameters of our law,
yes,
that you are protected in doing so, right? So now the issue is that them interfering with the food supply and all of that, was that government trampling on their right to life, or was it trampling on their right to dignity, which is being able to eat and, you know, feel normal and all of that? And if those rights were being trampled upon, would Section 36 apply? Section 36 of the Constitution, to be specific, because that's the limitation of rights. So every right is exclusive and whatnot, but the one right that cannot be limited is the right to life. Every other right can be limited because now we do a balance between balance of interests in terms of justice.
Correct.
Is it easier for me? Does it make sense for my rights to trample Mudibedi's? And if so, what are we basing that on? And if in terms of the limitations test it makes sense, then yes, Mudibedi must accept that his right will be trampled upon.
So I have a feeling that limitations test is something that's really being leaned on in that question.
Yes.
And Okay. To bring us not only to that question, but to our little off-air discussion, mm-hmm. which was really around, I think we are agreed that it was 4 months that government was cutting off food, not with the intent to kill, but certainly with the intent to smoke them out, which was the not so PC way that they put it.
Yes.
And amongst amongst the concerns there, I think the South African Human Rights Commission made its case, and unsuccessfully in the end, right? Mm-hmm. Saying mm-hmm. that there should be right to life because of exactly what you just said. You are limited. You have limitations.
Yes.
The one other thing that I feel, because I remember before we went to the break, I said I want to talk about their rights as well. That I think that the thing that's underestimated, as I said in the opening of this particular segment, is the degree of information we gained over time.
Mm.
So before it just seemed, at the beginning, it seemed like rogue Zamazamas. Even when Beitele was still police minister, we spoke about them like these sort of vandals of society. And then the more of them who came out, it seemed as though they were kind of lured into... It's a place where everybody pretty much participates in mining. Nobody's really thinking about, am I employed by Bushveldfontein, or am I Bushveldfontein, excuse me, or am I employed by somebody with a rifle from Lesotho underground?
Yeah.
And they kind of only find out 2 kilometers underground that, oh, this is not a great job. And I want to know the extent of rights that you have when, yes, you may be here illegally, we'll put you in jail or whatever for that. Yes, you may be doing something you're not supposed to do. But what about the part where you were coerced, extorted, or forced to do something underground at gunpoint? What rights do they have in that perspective? Because a lot of those guys are like, we don't even see gold. Mm. I just organize. I'm supposed to move batches. I haven't touched gold my whole time down there. Or I'm just here to move the food. It seems like it's a very big operation. You know, like if you can imagine a gang.
Yeah.
Like the foot soldiers are like, I don't know what I'm doing here. I just needed food.
Mm.
Do they have rights?
They do. And unfortunately, still, there's a lot of limitations because it falls within the realm of criminal activity. So, what
ignorance is not a defense.
No, unfortunately. Yeah. That was put away in the 1960s. Mm-hmm. I forgot the name of the case. But anyway, what usually happens is that we are charged with the doctrine of common purpose. Okay. So, even if you don't know a lot about what is happening, you still had an idea that what you're doing in there is going to be doing X, Y, and Z.
Yes.
And you were getting instructions from so-and-so, right? But with that being said, in terms of Section 204 of the Criminal Procedure Act, you can become a state witness.
All right.
So then you get protected, even if you're Section 49 person.
From an illegal perspective.
You can still become a state witness. And in that situation, the state is then because your attorney, whether legal aid or your private attorney, goes into an agreement with the state to say, we will give you X information. In exchange, this is what I want.
Which will hopefully be a reduced sentence.
Correct. Sometimes not even a sentence at all.
Okay.
Yeah.
Other question that I have for you is, what is in the best interests of South Africa now?
Yeah.
As we proceed. So, in other words, okay, finally they're out of the ground. Is it worth it to spend state money to prosecute these people? Do we just deport?
What usually happens in the courtroom is that, firstly, if it's a crime that deals with an individual getting hurt, they want to try you for that one.
Okay.
And then find you guilty for that one. And then they deport you.
And you can serve your sentence there.
Yeah. So, but if it's just a Section 49 only, the court just gives an order for Department of Home Affairs to now take you to where you need to go. But with this particular one, state resources were already used to feed them.
Right.
For X amount of time.
Right.
There was state resources to go to court to try and assist them.
And to extract them.
You know?
Yeah.
So now perhaps the state feels like maybe it's necessary for us to actually prosecute because we lost a lot.
Right.
In getting them out, in everything. And we were also taken to court back and forth to say that we are trampling on these people's rights. But if it wasn't such a huge case, it would have been likely that most of them would have been deported by now.
Mm.
And then maybe there'll be some kind of negotiations with the mine owners to try and sort out whatever they need to sort out to close it off so that this doesn't happen again. But I've got a feeling it's going to proceed. Plus, I forgot one more charge that may happen, yes, which is human trafficking.
I do think so.
There were minors, apparently, as in like children who were there. People under the age of 18. Yeah. So they can't give consent to do stuff 100%. Like that. And as a result, the Child Justice Act now comes into play. So the Child Justice Act deals with children under the age of 18, whether they have criminal capacity, so which is criminal understanding of what they did. And if it can be determined by social services that they had no idea what they were doing, they were following Malume or whoever down there, and then they didn't know that what they were doing was illegal, then they cannot be charged.
Right.
And even if they are illegal in the country, they are still minors.
Yes.
So they would have to be taken back into the care and custody of social services in their home country. But if their parents are here, there's also the dilemma of we can't separate mom or dad from the children. But if mom and dad are the illegal, criminals, that's another situation that we're not dealing with. It's a really hot potato.
The other thing, of course, is the optics. So the importance of justice is not only that it's done, but that it's seen to be done. So that it might be necessary in order to stave off any copycat crimes, and it is well understood that there are many of these illegal mines or retired or abandoned mines that are filled with zamazamas. Maybe not an operation of the scale, I'm not sure, but my understanding is that there are many.
Yeah.
And this almost is like the litmus test of what South Africa is willing to allow, what our criminal justice system will allow, what our Department of Minerals will allow, because I think that there's a failure of the company to rehabilitate the mine properly, and things of that nature. Maybe that's a place where it's worth it for the country, and also from a border perspective. I mean, we've heard the gentleman who hid his gold in shaft 10 or shaft 11. I'm not trying to give you proof, the guy, he said, down there, there's no xenophobia. We all live there as Africans. Some of us are down here for 2 years. They make their money and they go back to their country and feed their family for months on end. And that's a whole society underground and can't function, I'm afraid. Because unfortunately now they are at the end of a gun, a barrel of a gun.
Yes. So I think you're right. The only way for justice to be seen to be done is for this whole thing to play out. So there's a ruling of whatever sort. So there's a clear definition of what it is that can and cannot be done when it comes to the mines. And I believe that somewhere down the line there must be a civil suit, in my personal opinion, with regard to the Ministry of Minerals and Mine, all of that. So that they are given a clear mandate on what it is that they're supposed to do with these particular abandoned mines and all of that.
They have a mandate.
They do, but they've never done it.
Correct.
So now it has to be a court order so that failure to do so, the minister can be held in contempt of court.
I would like that very much.
So that we have a clear vision of what's supposed to happen going forward.
Yeah, I would very much. I mean, not necessarily this minister, just a minister.
Yes.
I feel, if you're the Minister of Minerals and Mineral Resources, in my field of work in the financial services industry, there are entire rehabilitation funds because when you get a mining license, you need to demonstrate that you will rehabilitate the mine after. South Africa's been mining for such a long time that most of our mines are like empty of any minerals or at the least it's costly to get more out of the ground. And so I sometimes wonder, I'll say it off air just in case I get sued, but I do sometimes wonder whether from a syndicate perspective, there's no way these guys are just waking up one day and going downstairs and picking up a gold piece to sell Erenk.
Who are you selling it to?
No. So who are you selling it? I want to know that part. That's the part I want to
know. And who sent you down there?
Who sent you? Who are you selling it to? How formalized is that side of things?
Yes.
Who's giving you the AK-47s underground? Yeah. Who's sending you down with whatever you need to separate things? That's not something we come together for 1,500 guys, Jay, on a whim.
And actually, you're adding another charge there, which is now unlicensed firearms and unlicensed ammunition, right? So now we're delving into the Firearms Control Act. So, that's another can of worms on its own.
Well, this entire thing exposes the extent of lawlessness, right?
Yeah.
The porous borders, the accessibility to rifles, the lack of oversight from departments of how how a productive space needs to be closed up. And then, of course, this horrible part, which we haven't talked about because I'm so nervous to talk about, but not just the deaths, but the cannibalism.
Yes.
Cannibalism is a crime, right?
Yeah,
I know it's
yeah,
gross, but
yeah,
it's a crime as
it
well.
Is, okay, it is. It is. It falls under sodomy as well. Yeah.
Oh, right. Like bestiality.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. All right, we've got to talk about it because some of the guys said there was some desperation down there. How do we prove this? I suppose
the bodies themselves will prove when they go for a post-mortem. The medical doctors will do what we call a 212 report, wherein they give evidence of what it is that they find on these particular bodies. And not only that, the people who were forced maybe to consume these bodies and those who witnessed people consuming the bodies, that's how we're going to be able to prove this.
Well, presumably you're not going to get bite marks out of a leg.
Probably not.
Okay, so someone's slashing. So how do we... Okay, so maybe you can see someone got cut and you can say, no, he got cut falling down the mine. Can you find traces of another human body in my bloodstream if I've eaten one?
Not that... I'm not aware. I don't know what the medical procedure
would be.
Sorry,
I'm making this face at you. I'm just... this topic is killing me.
I'm not aware if that would be the situation, but I think the best bet would be the guys who were... either one consuming or the ones who saw. Yeah, that will be your best
those are
bet.
The guys who are going to be state witnesses, hopefully.
Yeah.
And okay, who will blow the whistle. And in the States there's a thing called RICO, and I can't remember what the RICO means, but it's basically about a conspiracy. So something, if this is what I think it is, it's a broader conspiracy to commit extortion or, you know, theft and stuff like that. Is there a broad type of charge in South Africa to be like, it's not just these little guys that took a piece of gold each, but there is a systematic, like almost gangster system here.
Yeah.
Is there a charge that can be brought?
No. It can be a syndicate,
yes.
But there is no charge for syndicacy or something like that.
Yeah.
So you'll be charged with the actual crime that you were suspected of doing or whatever. If it was robbery, you'll be charged with robbery, fraud, etc., etc. But in order to get all of you connected in that particular crime, we use the doctrine of common purpose.
I see.
That way we are saying that you are of one mind.
Right.
So that's why we always say that when you see your friend do something, which he did, don't go like, I don't know, and then you walk away,
right?
Or you just stand there and do nothing.
And hold,
because if that friend gets arrested and they know, or they find you there, whatever, you're going to be charged whether you did it or you didn't,
like an accessory.
Correct,
because you didn't report it.
Correct. So you will, the same sentence that the person who actually committed the crime gets, you will also get.
So you're saying we must commit the crime then?
Oh, wow.
If we're going to get this...
I'm
just joking.
Just
I retract. Okay, wait. Okay, so this is weird because I'm now going back in history of Shabir Sheikh, who was found guilty of a mutually corrupt relationship with Jacob Zuma, but Jacob Zuma didn't have the same. He couldn't be seen as corrupt because he had to have his own crime. Why didn't the common purpose work there?
I don't remember that case
I'm just saying, like, if I find you and I to have a wholly corrupt relationship and I go to jail, it makes no sense that you, corruptor or corruptee, if you're on the other side of that relationship, shouldn't you?
If it's not the exact same crime, it may have been under the corruption, whatever.
Yes.
But maybe your part of it was the fraudulent part.
Yes.
And mine perhaps was the stealing part.
Okay.
Right? Even though a competent verdict of theft is fraud, but if your crime was specifically that, then that's that. And then mine was this.
So, okay, the reason I was asking you about whether or not we have, like, RICO holistic, what was the lovely way that you put it?
Syndicacy. Yeah.
Was there have been on the financial side of the world, and I'm going to have to wrap this up really quickly, but on the financial side of the world, there have been investigations regarding the movement and sale of gold off the books.
Yeah.
And large syndicates, high degrees of sale of gold without actually coming through on the production numbers in GDP. And so... to use an old man's term, I'm trying to connect the dots.
Mm.
And I would love to get to that part, because that's the stuff that gets us grey-listed. You know what I mean? It's all one chain.
Yeah. Someone somewhere knows something that they're not telling us.
This has been such a fascinating conversation. I'm so grateful to have been in your company, and Ntabi Seng, thank you so much for joining us for our legal matters. Legal expert Ntabi Seng Dubazana. I want to also thank you, listeners, for sending in your questions and giving us a call. She'll be back next Wednesday with Pimino Mudene on legal matters between 9 and 10 right here on Point of View. With that, I'll say goodbye for the evening. I'll be with you again tomorrow, and then your great queen, Pimino, will be back next week. All right. Thanks so much. That's a wrap.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.